If you're rocking to get up and it's not a rocking chair, it's time for the Joint Relief Institute. Fast relief, covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
Playing as the folk music, Joan Baez singing the songs of Bob Dylan. Joan Baez and Bob Dylan used to be boyfriend and girlfriend, but that didn't work out because I think Bob Dylan would be a nightmare to be a girlfriend of. I got a book in the mail, I think maybe at first by email, and I get a lot of books in the mail saying, "Hey, Mr. Kogan, I've written a book about something." This one, however, really, really grabbed me. It's titled, "It's Not the Trauma, It's the Drama," which is a very clever title. Stories by a Chicago Fire Department paramedic. I had recently written about a Chicago fireman named Matt Drew, who did not write a memoir, but who wrote a book about the, you know, historical figures in Chicago. So I got in touch with Marjorie Lee Bomben. And here she is. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
She's here with her cool son who just graduated from high school and who does, what is that thing called?
A kendama.
A kendamer?
Kendama.
Yeah, it's out of my league. It's some, how do you describe it?
When my friend got me into it, he told me that it's a Japanese skill toy. It's kind of like a ball and cup, and there's a spike, and there's a hole in the ball.
Yeah,
and just
kinda... you're very good at it. I'm sorry, this is radio, so people can't see. Marjorie, tell me about your background, because what I found about this book is it's a very honest memoir of a very, very tough job, but it's also very well written. I'm going to read. I've picked out some things to read in here just to show people. What a good show people to let people hear what a good writer you are. What's your background? Where are you from?
I was born in Massachusetts, so I'm
that's okay.
An East Coast transplant, but I've been in Chicago since about 1972. I went to high school at Oak Park River Forest High School, moved to Chicago in 1980.
And what made you decide that being a paramedic would be something you'd like to do? Because that, you will agree with me that it's a, I'm not saying it's a weird career choice, but it's a tough career choice as opposed to, you know, being a programmer or a journalist or something. You know what I mean? Was it some history of firefighting or medicine in your family background?
No, there wasn't. Well, I grew up believing that there wasn't anything I couldn't do, first of all. Second of all, right out of high school, I became a dental assistant.
Okay.
I didn't like the job. I had no idea what I wanted to do, but I knew I wanted to do something different. A patient of ours was one of the first women paramedics on the Chicago Fire Department, so I started asking her about the job. So I went to EMT school, gained my EMT B license, which is EMT basic, which is the first step toward becoming a paramedic. And I got myself a job on the private ambulances.
Did you find that? I mean, was that, you know, one of the things that impresses me about the book, and I should realize this, this is not a fun, there's fun in the book. I'm telling you, there is fun in the book, but it is not what someone would describe as a fun job. Would they?
Well, yes.
Wow.
It is.
Wow.
I love my job. I mean, I would do my job for free. There's people who, you know, pay money to, you know, see and, you know, hear about these kinds of things.
Yeah.
I think it's a fabulous job. When you walk in the firehouse door, from one minute to the next, you never know what's going to happen.
Exactly.
I think that's great.
Yeah, that
I
is.
Love it.
No, that is that. You're right. That is exciting. The private company didn't appeal to you, or you decided or thought to yourself?
The private ambulances are sort of a step toward going on the fire department. Everybody's goal, or most people's goal, is to get on the fire department. And as an EMTB, that's an EMT basic, you don't do emergency runs. You do non-transport
Well, like you go to someone's house and you don't take them anywhere.
Well, you're not supposed to have sick people. You transport people, you know, from home to the hospital, from home to a nursing home for appointments. So you don't do emergency calls. And what had happened to me was I had gotten – I called to transport a gentleman from his home to the hospital. He ended up being much sicker than he was supposed to be. In fact, he was in cardiac arrest.
Oh, God.
So with our meager EMTB skills, all we could do is start CPR and call 911. So the Chicago Fire Department paramedics blew in. They intubated him. They started IVs. They put him on the monitor. They shocked him. They gave him medication, and they saved this guy. And I stood there, and I'm sure like an idiot, with my mouth hanging open in awe.
No, but you're sort of in awe, though.
Oh, I was in awe of their skills and their speed, and that's when I knew I wanted to be a paramedic on the Chicago Fire Department.
Well, there's also something, though, about there's a power in it where you can actually help people, right?
Sure. I mean, I wouldn't call it a power. I always knew I wanted to do something to help people. Listen, you know, bad things are going to happen to people. But, you know, I, you know, worked very hard on, you know, becoming the best paramedic and I can be, and I would, you know, want to be the one to help people in their, you know, time of need.
You write in the introduction to this thing, it's a chilling number. I mean, it really stunned me. Mm-hmm. Chicago is one of the highest murder rates and some of the busiest ambulances in the United States. Now, get yourselves ready for this, ladies and gentlemen. Chicago Fire Department ambulances respond to more than 300,000 calls a year.
Yeah, that's correct.
Mm-hmm. You, young man, your mom's a paramedic. That just is a stunning number to me.
Oh, absolutely.
And when you realize, too, as you point out in the book, that all of these calls are not coming from East Lakeshore Drive, they're generally coming from beleaguered and dangerous neighborhoods, right?
Yes, that's true.
I'm going to say another, read a little more, because I really do like your writing. Do you have any training as a writer?
No, I don't.
Did your son write this book? Did he write it while he's not playing with his toy? How easy was it for you? Because, again, I'm going to tell you, it's really well written, and that's one of the things that greatly surprised me. Was it hard to write?
The writing was not difficult. I mean, there's certain stories that stick with me. I was on the ambulance for 25 years. I had thousands and thousands of runs, and certain stories have always stuck with me. So as far as writing a story, I had the stories and I could whip them out.
So you sort of trusted yourself with what stayed with you was obviously important to you, and those are some of the stories. How many stories are there in here?
It's 20.
20?
Mm-hmm. 20? Actually, 21. I wrote one story at the end, which is going to be in my next book.
Here she writes again. When the old-timers, co-workers of mine who'd been on the job for over 30 years began to retire, they took their treasure trove of stories and experiences with them. What a loss. It is for this reason that I put pen to paper. Good going is what I say. Marjorie Lee Bomben is here with her son talking about the book It's Not the Trauma, It's the Drama, Stories by a Chicago Fire Department Paramedic. We'll get into some of those stories, some of the ones we can talk about on the air, because some we can't talk about on the air. There's one incredible one where the guy is like, well, I can't say because I can't say what he said. So we take a little commercial break. She's going to be here all hour, and I'm going to talk to her son about this. Has got to be just such a stressful job. I'm so curious about your dream. You don't look stressed. I mean, you're like, yeah, there's nothing on. I saved this guy.
We carried you in our arms on Independence Day, and now you throw us all aside, and put us on our way.
It's so sweet. And Marjorie Lee Bomben, who is in the studio for the whole hour with her nice high school graduate son, wrote in the book to Mr. Kogan, I hope you enjoy my book. I got to tell you, I really did enjoy it. It is titled, It's Not the Trauma, It's the Drama, Stories by a Chicago Fire Department Paramedic. I know your initial reason, Marjorie, you talked in the book about, you know, all the older guys retiring and taking with them when they retire their stories. You just wanted to capture the things as you remembered them, right? You also, though, talk a little closer. You also, though, make commentary in here, beautiful commentary about the job and what the job means to you. What was your first call? Do you remember your first call?
I don't remember my first call because, unfortunately, a lot of our calls are for non-emergency issues. So, thankfully, I didn't have some horrendous call first day. So I was eased into it. The ambulance guys were watching over me.
Sure. Was it difficult to, let me ask you too, was it, how many women could there have been on when you started?
I started on the fire department in 1983. There are very few women paramedics. The number, exact number, I don't know.
Yeah, but I would think the percentage would be very small.
Sure it was. Yes.
How were you treated? I know firemen are good guys.
Mm-hmm.
There's always a rotten apple somewhere, but there are rotten apples in the newspaper, too. But were you treated, did you feel any kind of sexism at all? Or you were, if you could do the job, you were an equal then, right?
Well, and then I don't know about an equal because the firefighters and the paramedics were actually much busier than the fire companies. We weren't in the firehouses very often. The Chicago Fire paramedics, Fire Department paramedics are some of our hardest city workers. They do 15, 20, sometimes up to 30 runs in a 24-hour shift.
Wow.
Operating in some of the most dangerous neighborhoods in the country. In 1983, there were much fewer ambulances than there were now. So in the firehouse, we weren't there often, but it was an interesting time on the fire department. It was right after the strike, which was in 1980.
Sure.
And there was still a lot of, let's say, hate in the air between the firefighters. So there was strife, you know, between the firefighters, the ones who went on strike and ones who didn't. And there was a lot of these guys had come on in the 1950s and 60s. And I think I was more of a novelty than anything else because
their wives didn't work. Right, It was a changing world. You were a manifestation of the changing world, the working woman.
Mm-hmm.
You write in here, and I will tell you again what a good writer you are. Chicago Fire Department paramedics work in some of the most dangerous neighborhoods in the country. We told you that at all hours of the day and night. It's just the two of us. We have no weapons, nothing to defend ourselves with. Sure, we are street smart and take precautions. For instance, and this is really incisive about the way the city is, I think, too. All we say, hey, how's it going to anyone, everyone, as you make your way from the ambulance to a patient. If someone is giving you a hard time on a run, ask him to help you do something, such as holding a stretcher or keeping gapers at bay, and never stand. And this is a chilling sentence, and never stand in front of a door while you are knocking on it. Someone may shoot through it. That's pretty scary. You must, during your time there, the early years, was there any fear or? Do you get used to it, or you just learn how to operate? You know, it's like depending on where you live, and if some kid is living in Englewood, his parents say, don't look at this person and walk this way and don't do that.
Sure.
Do you get the hang of it after a while? Is that it, or is there a sort of...
I think you have to have a certain personality to be a paramedic, first of all. I don't know if I was naive or...
I just think that
I thought nothing could happen, and you do learn as you go along. But I had no fear. But that's just the kind of person that I always was.
Yeah. Were you married then? You married a firefighter.
No, I was not married when I started on the
Did he see you on a run and fall in love
No,
with
actually,
first
he was not on the fire department when I came on the job. He was actually working on the private ambulances, and I was on the fire department probably 10 years before I met him.
Well, you had a good-looking kid there, I'll tell you that. Tell me about, you know, I'm just going to flip through the book. You have a lovely picture here and a lovely chapter about a guy named Don Burke.
Right.
Who was Don Burke?
Don Burke was a firefighter at one of the firehouses I was at. He was a great guy, funny, good firefighter. But you know, at the end of his career, so he was working at a firehouse in one of the slower neighborhoods, looking forward to retiring.
And what happened?
We were coming in the firehouse. It was about 2 o'clock in the morning, and the fire engine and truck were slow. There weren't many fires in this neighborhood, and we noticed the engine and the truck were out. We thought this was very unusual, and as we're pulling in, we got a call to a fire for a firefighter down.
That must be terrifying when you hear that.
Because
you know this
could
be a friend or a loved one.
I've never had to work on anyone I knew, and it was really actually my worst nightmare.
And a fear.
Sure. And we didn't know who it was, and we get very little information from dispatch. Firefighter down was all we knew. So, you know, as we pulled up, the firefighter, it was dark. It was about 2 o'clock in the morning, and there was water and mud everywhere, and one of the guys was yelling, "Don's down, Don's down," and he had gone into cardiac arrest at a fire.
You saved him.
We did save him, which was actually a miracle.
When you were – you do a wonderful – this is a very moving chapter, and you tell it really well here. When you're writing about something like that, that was so, I can't even imagine how emotionally intense it had to be. You must almost start feeling the same emotional feelings you felt at the time, don't you? Sort of, yes.
I do. When I think about my stories, I do actually relive them. I mean, I can remember every second of the story. As I think about it.
What about this one? There's an early story. I'm just going to say he has a brick. Come on. You got hurt, too, didn't you?
Oh, yeah.
She's looking at me like, what, Rick? You're making up story. What happened there?
Oh, the guy who was chasing us?
Yeah.
Threw the brick through the window? Well, unfortunately, a huge percentage of our calls involve drugs, alcohol, mental illness, and as I stated earlier, people call many times for non-emergencies. And
well, there was one. There's one woman in the thing who called in your book because her kid. You come to see her kid, and the kid has a cold.
Yes.
But that one, we're all over the place here, but you're going to be here for an hour, so we'll get back to the brick thing. That was a haunting one. I want to find that because I want to read what, chilling to me, because she said, thanks, this is really great radio, me thumbing through a book. I know that really is very, very, very exciting. But she says, you ask her, why don't you, here it is. Here, I got it. It's one of the early ones. You get to the place and you say, did you take her temperature? And she goes, no. And you say, why not? She goes, I don't have a thermometer. I can't afford it. When I read that, I got really sad thinking, God, there are other people. But then you write, noticing the track marks on the mom's arm, she clearly could afford her drug of choice. After a thorough examination, the baby clearly had nothing more than a cold. Those calls are pretty frequent, aren't
yes.
they? The ones that are like someone has a sore leg or something.
Yes. And,
and what do you think when you go in, you see it, you say, well, this is nothing.
Right.
Do you get mad?
I did go through a period of being extremely angry.
Frustrated and
yes.
angry.
I mean, in the book, it's sort of also an evolution of...
Oh, no, that's what... No, that's,
of coming to terms with... We are social services on wheels. Because, yes, at first I was extremely angry, and I didn't, you know, understand why people are calling for non-emergencies and It was very frustrating, but it is what it is. This is what I have to deal with, and I had to come to terms with it in some way and not be angry and try to understand people. You don't know what people have been through in their lives.
Good point. Good point.
And to them, an emergency, it may be emergency, and to me, it's not. And maybe they just want to ride to the hospital and they're not going to pay the bill. But what am I going to do? As soon as, you know, I'm going to sit there and argue with people, it's easier just to take them to the hospital, not have any problems, not get in a hassle with people and possibly be, you know, attacked and get people
sure.
angry and
sure.
then just move on to the next one.
Depending on where, is there a, 1 minute we have left before the news, is there a, do you somehow gird yourself when walking in a place you don't know? I mean, by girding yourself, I mean, do you go, okay, you know, it's the unexpected. Is there a kind of process you don't?
No.
You're an, you're an unbelievably cool person. Marjorie Lee Bomben is a paramedic with the Chicago Fire Department who has written a book called It's Not the Trauma, It's the Drama. Stories by a Chicago Fire Department paramedic. She's in here with her high school graduate son, and the book is, she has another book in her, we'll talk about that later. It's a series of stories about her working life, but in a way it's also a sort of slight memoir of your life itself and how you sort of changed in this thing. You get a pretty good sense out of the book of who you are, and you seem like, from the book and talking to you for a half hour, a really good person. So stick around. By us sings Bob Dylan, and Marjorie Lee Bomben's mom was her principal reader on her book, It's Not the Trauma, It's the Drama. Now, your son is in here. What's your name?
Nathaniel.
Nathaniel. You haven't read the book yet.
Not most.
Because you're too busy playing with that thing you have. But what? Your dad's a fireman.
Mm-hmm.
Your mom is a fire department paramedic.
Yep.
When did you realize what they did for a living, and did you at any point say get scared?
I would say definitely as a kid, I was blind to what they actually see and what they go through. I can't remember a specific time or point in my life where I realized that what they actually did, that every day they woke up and they went to their job, and they're honestly putting their life on the line for other people to keep them safe and things like that, but there definitely wasn't a point specifically that I can remember where I was like, oh, geez, this is nuts.
Yeah, quit your job, Mom. you do. You must, as a result of knowing what they do, you must be terribly proud of your...
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Knowing that they are basically... I mean, you guys are saving lives. I know it may not seem so to you. You know, Marjorie's got this great, wonderful, light attitude about it. And I'm like, man, you're risking your life. Here is Marjorie when she was really mad. Here's her beginning one chapter. But this is also very good writing. It's very honest writing. Historically, there have been true psychopaths on this job. Somehow they endure and become our bosses. The crazier they are, the more likely they are to be promoted. That's the way it goes on the Chicago Fire Department. If your friends read and colleagues read this,
yes.
I think that's hysterical. I think it's real. I also think it's lovely writing, and it's a very honest paragraph.
Yes, it is truthful, especially the way things go in Chicago.
Yeah,
it's you know, well, someone who knows someone.
Where you've worked all over the city. You've been
sure.
You've been at different. Of locations all over the city, you gotta in some. One of the things about a job like this, and I'm sure it's true for your husband too, and for any firefighter, you see parts of the city that the tourists down here on Michigan Avenue don't see, and it is And Nathaniel, you've probably seen some too.
Absolutely.
It's sad. Don't you find it? It's sad the way some people have to live, don't you think?
It's horrible. I've worked in some of the most impoverished and dangerous neighborhoods in the city. I was working when I started. I was working on the west side of Chicago. And after about 5 years, the novelty of the job begins to wear off. And at one point, I was going to quit. I'm like, I can't do this anymore, because I actually felt like every time I was driving to work, I was being transported to hell.
Wow.
It was horrible.
Yeah.
The way the people live, and the violence and the drugs.
And it just, 20 years ago, there were, hard to believe, more shootings than there are now. I know that's hard to believe for some of you people, but there were some years there were 900 people killed every year in this town. One of the things about, I think one of the reasons that fewer people are dying is because you and paramedics in general and the medical industry has gotten better at what they do. You can save more lives now, can't you? When 20 years ago, a gunshot wound for one reason or another might have been fatal, is no longer fatal, right?
That is true. We have more ambulances than we did 20 years ago, first of all. And with trauma patients, speed is of the essence. Getting the ambulance there, getting the person transported to the hospital, getting them to the trauma surgeon. We also, 20 years ago, did not have designated trauma hospitals where they have trauma teams on staff. So that's made a huge difference in the survival rate.
Right. Has there been anything else on the job that has made you toy with the idea of quitting? Because it is, as funny as the book, I'm telling you people, there's great humor in the book. And great observations, too, about life in general. And do you find, Marjorie, that you think about life differently, having to live that kind of, it's not life and death every day, I know that, but it's life and death enough to make you think differently and probably, hug your kids harder or hug your husband harder and stuff like that?
You appreciate your life, and any difficulties I've ever had in my life growing up, everybody has, different, dysfunctions in their family or, friends. It's nothing. It's nothing compared to the way some people live.
It gives you a perspective that nobody who works as an accountant on Michigan Avenue is ever going to get. Now, you said off air that you had some of these stories, you wrote them a while ago and just buried them. And you wrote them because you wanted to remember them.
Yes.
But then what was the catalyst? What was it that made you say, I want to put these between the covers of a book. I want other people to read what I've experienced. Was there some thing that happened or some way you felt that compelled you to say, I want a book?
A lot of the old-timers, guys who've been on the job over 30 years, began to retire. And they took with them just a treasure trove of fabulous stories.
Yeah.
And the Chicago Fire Department paramedic has never had a book published.
This
and
is
I
the
thought
first
it was,
one.
Yes, this is the first one. And I thought it was such a loss. These stories are just gone. So, I really thought, someone has to do it.
Why not me?
Exactly. There you have it.
What are your colleagues? What are the people who have read it who are paramedics? What do they think?
Oh, it's gotten really good reviews. Everybody's enjoyed it, and everybody can relate to all these stories. I mean,
because even if it's not the same person, there's a similar something or other.
Sure.
That happened.
I mean, I've heard from paramedics, firefighters, really, honestly, all over the world, all over the country, who can relate and said, "Oh yeah, I've had similar stories.
I had a guy like that. I did a thing like that."
Exactly. So it's as crazy as the stories read to someone who isn't in the medical field. This is what paramedics do, every shift, every day. It's
how do you work?
Crazy.
You work a 24-hour shift.
Sure. We work 24 hours and have 3 days off.
Doesn't it exhaust you?
Actually, it doesn't.
But you must be used to it by now.
Sure.
We got to take a break in a few minutes. I want to ask you about the changes in this city since and the sort of nature, changing nature of the calls that used to exist 20 years ago. You've been in this 25 years?
33.
You look so young.
Oh, thank you.
Well, thank you. In the days when public housing existed here, when high-rise public housing existed here, can you compare, sort of tell me the difference from when the Taylor Homes were there and Cabrini Green was there? Mm-hmm. And because those places, because I used to do it as a reporter too, mm-hmm. going to those places were, I don't care if you're wearing a uniform or not, it was scary.
Yeah. I did work in Robert Taylor Homes. I've been there many, many times. And also Cabrini Green. In the 90s, they got security guards there. But when I worked, they did not have them. So I would say, as far as some of the scariest places I've worked, definitely. I mean, you go in there and it's...
Yeah, because you're...
You never know what's going to happen.
Oh, my God, and the elevators didn't work.
And the elevators don't work, and you have to go up the dark stairways. So, yeah, it was interesting.
Yeah. I'm not sure the same... You know, my idea was never to have... I wasn't in charge, but vertical public housing was a terrible idea. High-rise public housing, and it just made the ghettos more kind of confined and you could control them, the bad people.
Sure, but
could take total.
But again, when you go
them.
In, would you go in with an attitude of, you know, not being afraid, say hi to everybody, hey, how's it going? And honestly, you would be surprised at how nice people are. I mean, they're kind of look at you sideways when you come in, but if you say, hey, how's it going? They're like, good, how are you doing?
See, one of my theories, and tell me before we take a break mm-hmm. if you believe this, is that 99% of all people who live in this city, 95, 98, 97, mm-hmm. 96, they just want to get along. They just sure. want to live their lives. They don't want to hurt anybody. Sure. They don't want to do anything bad.
Yes.
And they have to live with this horrible image that people have put on. Don't you agree?
Yeah,
I don't care how bad the neighborhood is.
Right.
Most people want to raise a good kid. They want to do what they can. They have disadvantage. Do you agree with that? You've seen more of life than I do. Yeah.
I think you'd have to
win a job like this,
right.
I think.
Yeah.
We will be back, and I will ask Marjorie Lee Bomben to talk about a couple of her. There's one story in here called, I've told you a lot, there's one chapter titled Naked Man. And I'm sure she has seen, well, she talked in that same chapter, she's seen more. It's like, what's the question? It's like, why don't people put clothes on when we're coming over? It's not like a dinner party, but you called the paramedics over. Put a robe on or something. We'll be back after a short little break. Joan Baez singing Bob Dylan. I have a few more minutes with Nathaniel and his mom, as I'm calling this team in here. Marjorie Leigh Bomben, who has written It's Not the Trauma, It's the Drama, stories by a Chicago Fire Department paramedic. The first book, as far as we know, written by a Chicago Fire Department paramedic. It is not just a gathering of fun and some chilling stories. It really is insightful about a Chicago that many of us never see, never will see, sometimes for the best, sometimes not. It also explains what she, very honest and forthright book, explains what she goes through on some of these things. This is a good book, I think, for anybody who lives in Chicago because it opens them up to a life we don't know unless it's on, you know, Chicago Fire and you see a paramedic somehow come in the show, and I'm not sure how. Wait, what is your husband? He's a fireman. What does he think of that show, Chicago Fire?
He's a firefighter paramedic. He always points out everything they do.
That's wrong.
That's not by the standard operating procedures at fires.
This book is, I think it's good, Marjorie, just for the general reader.
Sure.
But it's good. There are other audiences for this thing. Who do you think is a good audience for this book?
Yeah, I think I'm lucky enough to have a husband who is a firefighter paramedic, so we can go home and, you know, talk about what happened during the shift, and he totally gets it. I think for a spouse of a firefighter or a paramedic, I think for them to get really just a little bit of a deeper understanding of what we go through, it would be.
Now, do the kids, there's Nathaniel and you have a daughter, right?
Correct.
Do they ever say, Mom, Dad, shut up? I'm not sure they would at the dinner table. Mom, Dad, could you please not talk about
it? Oh, no, they love the stories. They want every detail of stories. They ask me to tell them stories. What happened? What did you have? Since my daughter was could, you know, talk practically. Mama, what happened at work?
Neither of the kids is interested, do you think? They're young, relatively young. Of getting in the same line of work.
Yeah, my daughter's in paramedic school.
She is.
Yes. Mm-hmm. She's following in my footsteps, and she absolutely loves it.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Has she ever gone out with you on?
Yeah, she's ridden on Chicago Fire Department ambulances, and
I think that's great. That must make you. How does it make you feel?
I want her to do what she loves. And she loves it. She's always had been fascinated and had an interest in my work.
You think she'll like New Year's Eve? Because you write in here, New Year's Eve is the worst day of the year to be on shift. I can imagine why. Tell us why.
Well, a lot of people are drinking, partying, a lot of violence, drugs, name it.
But wouldn't that also be because, you know, we know what happens on New Year's Eve and people decide to, if they don't have fireworks, they decide to shoot their guns off.
Sure.
Is that also maybe the scariest night of the year? You talked, and I read a thing from you where you say when you go up to a front door, you knock from the side because you don't know if someone's, and New Year's Eve must be terrifying.
Well, I don't know about terrifying.
Well, see, because you're
okay,
cool
what you
about
do,
this.
There's a procedure you follow on New Year's Eve. When you get close to midnight, either you stay in the hospital until after they shoot all the guns off, or if you're in the rig, you pull over and you kind of hit the dirt. It's in the down, in the front of the ambulance, or go in the back until they're done shooting.
That's still something that the normal person down here in this neck of the woods is not even thinking about it. We were talking about public housing when I used to go into Robert Taylor homes for stories. One of the first things that just shocked me no end were people on the fourth floor. They had their mattresses on the floor, and I'm like, why? Well, we don't want to. People shoot through the windows here.
True.
You know, you've seen that a million times.
Right. Just get out of the way.
Yeah, people shouldn't live that way. You're proud of this book, aren't you?
I am.
You really are. I can see that.
The
I can
stories
see
are like
that.
My children.
Not as nice
okay.
as,
not as the child.
Not me. Not me, Mom, says Nathaniel. But it's also empowered you, don't you? I mean, you have another book in you, don't you?
I do. I have.
The end of this book comes with a, it says, read a story of Marjorie's next book, CFD Shorts, More Stories by a Chicago Fire Department Paramedic. And it has starts with something called The Democratic Committeeman. You published this book yourself.
Yes.
Because you went around, and as I've said on the show a million times, the publishing business is nuts. Now, it doesn't make any sense. It's totally crazy. So you've been out promoting the book yourself? Have you given library talks or any stuff like that?
I have not given talks. A lot of social media, word of mouth, and it's done very well.
Yeah. What about these other stories? Is it going to be... Because there's a lot of you in here, and that's one of the reasons I like it so much. I mean, you obviously have tons more stories to tell, but is it going to also be the memoir part of this is what makes is really a strong part of it? Are you going to maybe bring your husband into this book a little bit? Because I think what he does is fascinating, too.
Yeah, I may have to. He has some... fabulous stories, and you may think I have thousands and thousands of stories. I've forgotten much more than I've retained, and I always think that I don't remember anything, and I don't have a next story, and then it'll come to me. So I always think I'm running out of stories. So I And I have asked him, I'm like, give me some stories. What do you got? And he's got some fabulous stories.
Well, but the other thing, Marjorie, is you know there's another story on your next shift,
this too, don't you? This is true. Yeah.
Don't you?
It is true.
You must have met on many of your, and I'm going to call them adventures because you don't know what's going to happen on each one of them. You must have met also some really good people.
Sure.
In your work.
Right.
Not just your colleagues and stuff, but good people out there.
It's true. You'd be surprised if there's a car accident, someone hit by a car, strangers helping strangers. I mean, it happens all the time. And that's the things you don't see on TV. You just hear about, you know, the awful things of, you know, someone was beat up and everybody walked over him and ignored him. But this happens every day of just strangers helping out individuals they don't know.
So as much as you may see the harsh, bloody sides of life, you also, it's counterbalanced by seeing the goodness of other people, isn't it?
Very much so.
How does that make you feel? It makes you feel good, I guess.
It does. I'm always an optimist anyway.
Wouldn't that be one of the, I know it's not on a list of job things, but wouldn't that be a qualification for someone in your line of work to be kind of optimistic and hopeful about life in general, or you'd go nuts, or you'd be drunk all the time, or something?
Well, that does happen.
Well, believe me, it happens.
It certainly is helpful to have an optimistic outlook. I'm not saying everybody does, but
are there more? Where there have to be many, many more women in this line of work than there were when you first started?
Yeah, I think I would take a guess that possibly about a third of the paramedics are women.
Is that right?
Many more women firefighters also.
Nathaniel, what do you want to do?
I wanted to go into CNC programming.
What's CNC?
It's basically like machining stuff out of metal and like making parts for cars or something like that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Where'd you get that?
As a kid, I was always like breaking stuff to kind of figure out how it worked. And over time, I started like making stuff on my own. And it just seems like the line of work that I want to go into, the more hands-on aspect of things.
Nice and less dangerous, probably. Well, maybe not. It seems like crazy.
As much as I respect what they do, it's just not for me, I would say.
Yeah, but it is for your daughter.
Definitely.
And that's a very neat thing, Marjorie. Mm-hmm. My guest has been not only Nathaniel Bomben, but Marjorie Lee Bomben. She's from the East Coast, but don't hold that against her. She's been in Chicago for a very long time. And for how many more years do you think you got? I mean, you can take early retirement, but how many more years do you think you got in you?
I'm retiring in November.
You're retiring this November?
Yes, I am.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Any reason, just the length of time you've been in?
Yes, 33 years is enough.
Yeah. And then you're going to become a full-time author? What do you think? I'm serious about this.
Well, I certainly will work on my my next book. I still have a lot of work to do. It is a process.
This is hard. I'll have to ask you next December. What will you miss the most? The camaraderie of your.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have. I'm a paramedic field chief now. I'm actually don't work on the ambulance. I'm in a supervisor position, and I have 9 ambulances under my supervision.
Wow.
And they're my people.
Yeah.
And I will definitely miss my crews.
You are a fascinating person, Nathaniel. You're a good kid too.
Thank you.
Success in whatever you do, whatever that toy is. I'll probably see my daughter playing with it in a few years. She's only 11, so stay away from her. You're a nice-looking kid, but stay away from her. I'll have you back on when the next book comes out.
Thank
I think that
so
would be
much.
Great. It's given me, it's not only a good read, it's really given me insight into a part of Chicago I don't see like you do.
Mm-hmm.
That's for sure. Thank all of you for listening. There would be no show if you didn't listen. Thanks, Aubrey Mumpower, for engineering. Ella for producing. Carla Mari is coming up.